You're listening to the Apple Insider Podcast.
Welcome to the Apple Insider Podcast, the show all about iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches, and much, much more. I'm your host, Victor Marks. Joining me today is Mikey Campbell. Welcome, Mikey.
Yo, what's up?
Hey, things are going well. So, Mikey, let me ask you, do you have an exercise regimen?
Not really. Do it when I can.
So you don't have like a regular running program to keep that fine physique that everyone on Twitter talks about?
No, it's natural.
Well then, so the point of this exercise is that we are sponsored today by Mara, and Mara is all about providing a smart running assistant, and so what you have here is a smart digital assistant, a hands-free running assistant that uses voice recognition and the microphone in your earbuds to help you optimize your runs. And you can tell it what kind of run you'd like to do. You can ask questions about your speed, pace, or location. You can have her play albums and playlists from your music library as you run. And she can also tell you how you're doing in comparison to your past runs or warn you about changes in weather, like if it's about to rain. She'll even track your progress by noting all of your rough legs and each time you run. And you can connect her to Amazon Alexa-enabled devices and ask about lifetime specifics and record, you know, when records that you set for your next run. So visit Mara.ai to download your free virtual running assistant today. That's Mara.ai. I should ask you, Mikey, do you have any Alexa-enabled devices?
Nope.
Huh. Wow, what an interesting life you lead. I've got a couple of those around here right now.
I just use HomeKit and whatever the first-party apps are with the smart home stuff that I have.
And in terms of smart home stuff, you've just got Philips?
A couple iDevices things and what else? Yeah, those are the ones that I use the most, or mainly.
Cool. Yeah, the iDevices products are pretty good too. So I want to break right into the news by talking about the Apple iPhone 8 rumors. So We talked about last week with Neil about how the idea of the iPhone was that it was going to start costing about $1,000 for the device. This week, we have rumors saying that instead of the whole lower chin, that whole Touch ID home button area, that's going to be replaced with a so-called function area. Yeah. What can you tell me about what a function area does? What's different here?
So basically, what information comes from Ming-Chi, everyone's favorite analyst, he's saying that Apple's going to use a larger OLED display but dedicate the bottom portion of it to a so-called function area or function row, which would assumedly include a virtual home button and other virtual keys, perhaps, for system controls. It's not really clear whether this area will also serve as a part of the main display. But from the note, it seems that it's going to be perhaps hard-coded or a set of virtual buttons are going to be hard-coded into the OS itself. So we shall see.
That feels in some ways like what Android has done.
I believe LG has a similar setup. On one of their phones.
Now, Apple got a patent covering micro LED displays capable of detecting touch events, right? Using infrared diodes. So they're going to use IR to detect fingerprints in that function area. Is that what I'm understanding here?
Well, I mean, that's what they could do. Whether that technology is ready for market or not is unknown. But they're going to have to find some sort of solution if they want. It seems like all the rumors are pointing to a full face display, which means that there's going to be no physical home button or you know how it is now, a Touch ID ring, basically, and embedded into the screen itself. Looks like that's going away or moved somewhere, perhaps.
Well, they're competing problems here, right? I mean the home button and whole chin area eats up a whole lot of space.
Yeah.
At the same time, having that indentation for where the home button is really nice because you can locate immediately where it's supposed to be with your thumb.
But if you go with that patent, for example, the entire screen can accept the fingerprint, so you just touch anywhere on the screen, which would be cool. It wouldn't be dedicated to one area. But I don't know if they're going to do that. I mean, I don't know. Assumedly, they're going to try to make the face as symmetrical as possible, right?
Yeah, but then, you know, here's the problem, right? Have you got the fourth gen Apple TV?
Mm-hmm.
And you got the fancy voice remote for that, right?
Yeah, right.
Have you ever picked that up wrong?
All the time, yeah.
Okay, so when the home button is no longer indented on the iPhone, it's going to be pretty easy to pick that thing up upside down now, isn't it?
What if there is no upside down?
You say that, but they have not been successful. They have tried many times to try and fix rotation awareness and stuff on the phone, and the iPad for that matter, and every time done it badly.
Yeah, I don't know. The latest iPhone is pretty sensitive. It's
It's not necessarily the sensitivity. It's that the operating system itself screws up when you rotate it. I can tell you all the time I get things where half the interface is rotated. If I'm doing messages, for example, I'll get the menu bar, the status bar across the right side of the display up and down as if it were in landscape mode. And I'll still have the keyboard in portrait.
It's not just Apple's OS. It's also the one that has like the cell bars and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
It's not just Apple that gets things horribly, horribly wrong. It's that there are applications, third party applications and Apple's own that understand rotating portrait and landscape, but only if you do it in the correct orientations. That is, they do two out of the four orientations you can do.
Yeah. I mean, there's always a chance that they could bake in better controls with iOS 11. Who knows? Who knows? I mean, it'd be pretty cool to have a phone that is position agnostic or orientation agnostic.
Yeah, it would, but then you'd have to deal with microphones and speakers being agnostic as well.
Well, it already is kind of, right? I mean, they're trying to build out their... I mean, if you look at iPad, right, they have the four speakers.
Right.
If you turn that into a phone... say put two speakers on either side, and iPhone already has multiple speakers in it, and just co-locate those on opposite sides of the phone, then you could have a basically an orientation agnostic phone. Interesting thoughts,
things that could be. So tell me, we've been talking for a long time about Lightning headphones and W1 equipped Apple headphones. So tell me about the Beats X.
Beats X, I did test out this past week when they came out. Pretty good. I mean, it has that Beats flavor, bass, big bass. And pretty good. But
let me ask you some questions. First of all, what's the best thing about them?
Probably, I'd say... the passive noise canceling that it has, which is the seal. The seal is very good, and they're very light, so you don't feel them.
Okay. What is the worst thing about them?
I really don't like the neck strap, or the connecting portion.
These are a pair of earbuds that have a cord that goes between them. One of the ends of the cord has the mic button controls, volume controls, track controls, whatever. And a battery inside the cable. And you don't like having the cable going between the two pieces?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they call it a flex form tether or cable. So it's kind of a springy metallic material wrapped in like a soft touch rubberized shell. So it's kind of comfortable, but I just don't like it touching my neck all the time. And you can feel it. It's just constantly there. I mean, it's a lot better than the another brand, you know, like with, for what brand is it? That makes the huge neck strap one that FedEx drivers use that we talk about.
Oh, right, right. That's LG by Harman Kardon or something.
Yeah, right. So it's not as big as that. And it's not as intrusive, but you're still aware that it's there. especially when running or anything, it bounces around.
Now, are there magnets in the earbud pieces so they stick together?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When the magnets stick them together, do they turn off?
No. No, they don't.
That's not good. Also, it seems to me they could have a switch inside them so that when the magnets are engaged, it knows that they're turning off.
Yeah, and also, my pair did not shut off automatically after it was not being used. It just stays on. I couldn't find any documentation about power savings, but it appears that you need to turn it on and off when you
use it. So I ask you, why did you give it a 4 out of 5 then?
It's probably one of the best Beats products that they've made. And it does bring
like the neck strap. You couldn't get it to turn off when they were supposed to. The battery performance.
I'm not sure that it was supposed to turn off. I think that's just by design. The W1 chip is where it's at, and this is the cheapest W1 model that you can buy right now.
So how much is it?
It's $149, I think.
Yeah. So you gave it a 4 out of 5 because it's got a W1 chip and it's $149.
Yeah. It's a good pair. Acts like a wired headphone. It does not act like a wireless headphone because of the W1 chip. And for that reason, it is good.
All right, because you didn't make it sound very well at the first part, right? It wasn't a singing recommendation there.
That's why it's not 5 out of 5.
That sounds like rating inflation to me.
No.
Why wouldn't it be like a 3 out of 5?
That's only, that's 60%. It's hardly passing. And this is not a hardly passing. Those are just my quibbles with it. Other people might not be bothered by the head strap or the tether as seen by, I think a lot of people use the tether because they can take the headphones out, let them dangle. Unlike AirPods where you, if you take it out, you have to stick in your pocket or something. Hmm. So if you're a person that always needs to, or likes to have one earphone out or have, take out both earphones, commonly take out both earphones, then it's a good option because then they're right there at the ready. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for answering those questions. Let me challenging you on it. It just didn't seem like the ringing endorsement that you were trying to indicate by that rating.
Yeah, I think the rating stands.
How much battery life did you get out of your test?
That's another plus. It was over the estimated 8 hours, I believe. I think the estimate was 8 hours that Apple gives. It was a bit over that.
Okay, so. Yeah. The point is, they're $149. They have the W1 chip, and you were not disappointed.
Yeah. I mean, the benefits outweigh the negatives, and also for some people, they will definitely sound better than AirPods. It has a definite sound signature. Whether you like it or not, it's up to you. But
right,
it's more dynamic than the AirPods, which are very flat.
Okay. Cool. So let me move on to our next topic, which is all about the next rumored Apple TV.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got the current Apple TV.
Yep.
Right. What is the current one missing?
For me, content. That's about it. I mean, yeah, content is the big thing. I mean, that's always been the thing about Apple TV is the content.
Okay. So it looks like this rumor indicates, and this is a Bloomberg report written by Mark Gurman, making the prediction that the next Apple TV is going to have 4K resolution and more vivid colors, which I guess would be HDR, wouldn't it?
Yeah, HDR support.
Right. So is that a big holdup for people?
I don't think it is. I mean, obviously for people who own 4K TVs, I guess, yes, it would be. But a vast majority of consumers that are looking to buy streaming boxes don't own 4K TVs. yet. I mean, they probably will as the standard becomes adopted at a wider scale, but for right now and for, you know, the time when the fourth gen Apple TV came out, that was not a huge deal, or a deal breaker at least.
Yeah. My understanding is that not a whole lot of 4K content, true 4K content, really exists. And if they did something like this, you'd think they would release 4K content in conjunction with it, right?
Yeah, I would hope so. I mean, I can see them just baking it in hopes that 4K content will come. But Sony, who launched their own, you know, 4K streamer and accompanying service, I mean, they're still having problems with getting content. A lot of it is just their own stuff.
Yeah.
So, there's a lot of hurdles to get 4K to a TV, right? Besides, the content, a lot of the content is filmed in higher than 4K resolutions, but getting it to consumers is a different story.
Right. So it has to be downscaled to 4K. It has to be done it in a way that a distribution partner can stream it. It has to be licensed by that distribution partner. It has to be, you know, you're right. And then, of course, the internet connection has to support it so that it doesn't get downscaled again because of slow pipes. Right? There's a lot going on there.
Yeah. And yeah. I mean, we're still slowly getting there, but I don't think we're quite there yet that everyone can have it or everyone wants to have it. And have that consistent experience.
And we're still at a point where 4K TVs aren't widely adopted yet. I mean, they're coming. They're out there. But in terms of people purchasing them, it's still very, very viable to purchase a 1080 set.
Yeah. And a lot cheaper.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
So what do you think of this rumor? Do you think that the Apple would do a sort of facelift version of the Apple TV where they gave it just the ability to do 4K?
Yeah, I think... I mean, why not? Because the next iteration is probably going to have a faster chip in it. And the only reason it doesn't do 4K now is because everything's being piped through that the A-series chip that was launched, almost 3 years ago now.
Yeah, so, it's A8, isn't it?
Yeah.
And
so
are we
when
on
you
in phones
bump
and iPads?
That spec, the A10 Fusion.
Okay.
So... yeah, so I mean, when you get that faster chip, which obviously supports 4K, you can just add in that whatever codec you like, probably whatever codec is the de facto. What are they using for 4K? I don't know.
It is a good question. Okay, well, let's take a moment and let's talk a little bit about malware. Have you ever had malware on a Mac?
Nope.
Well. I'm very glad for you. I've never had one on one of mine, but I have had to remove malware from other people's. Are you surprised by that?
Yeah, I've, no, I mean, I've heard of, I think, yes, I've, some people that I know of have had malware with they're free with their downloads.
Yeah,
if you know what
it's
I mean.
MapKeeper doing you a favor or something like that.
Yeah. MapKeeper.
So I've had to remove that several times from other people's Macs. I've had to remove other ones. But this one is a piece of malware uncovered by research firm and antivirus builder Bitdefender. And there's a strain of X agent for Mac that acts as a modular backdoor. Once it's installed, it checks for the presence of a debugger. And if it doesn't have one, it grabs out one and talks to a command and control server to turn on payload modules. The command and control URLs impersonate Apple domains, so nothing looks too suspicious. And it can run code, it can run processes, it can grab desktop screenshots, it can steal web browser passwords, it can take iPhone backups. It's kind of nasty.
Yeah, I think the iPhone backup thing is probably the most disconcerting.
Well, if you encrypt your backups, then you don't really have a problem.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's a way to... Well, I mean, once you have the encrypted data, might be a way
it's
to...
It's not good, but it's better than having it be unencrypted.
Yeah, it's better than in plain text, yeah.
So Bitdefender is still looking into it. It appears that X-Agent is at least circumstantial evidence points to different Russian hacking groups. But this is not good. It's something to be very wary of.
Yeah. Don't go around clicking on things you don't know, downloading. Stick to the Mac App Store if possible.
But one of the nice things about Mac OS is that, in years past, Apple would publish things about malware on their support pages and how to manually remove them. But with Mac OS Sierra, my experience so far is that when you reboot, it just does the removal job for you. So it's kind of sad because we used to say, when your Windows computer wasn't behaving correctly, well, have you tried rebooting? But now that's the correct advice to solve a malware problem, which is both good and annoying.
Yeah. Yeah. Which could be bad because I don't really... How often do you restart your Mac?
Well, some people do it every day. About once a month.
Yeah. Me too. Don't really do it very often.
I do it because I have too many browser tabs open and I've used up all of my RAM and it's just easier to start fresh.
Oh, you gotta, Yeah. What do you use? Safari or?
I use Chrome? Safari day to day, and I use Chrome when we do the podcast.
Yeah, because you have to.
Well, it keeps all of the tabs just for the podcast in one place, called organization. Yep. So, one of the other topics of the day is the topic of fake news. And you and I were talking about this a little bit before we started the show, but basically Eddie Hughes says that Apple is going to work to combat fake news in the Apple News app. And, he said he was asked about it, and he says it's on the responsibility is on all of the companies and technology and services to ensure that the problem doesn't spread. But it's interesting. His quote was, "Since the vast majority of news is now being read through devices and through services that are provided through those devices, then I think we have responsibility for it," he says. So we were taking both sides of this, right? Is it Apple's job to curate and eliminate fake news? Don't hold back.
I don't think it's their part. I don't think it's their duty to do so. I think it's their it's a prerogative if they want to, and it would benefit them to have a service like news have the most accurate or
Step back a step here. So Apple has this news app, and they are vetting who and curating who's going to be in the news app, right?
They approve
that as a source to include. So they're doing some basic checking and basic blessing of the sources that are in there. So do they have a responsibility because they've blessed the source to track that it's not fake news?
I don't think
because that would be far too deep. Right? Do they have to check each story?
Yeah, I mean, it would be... Yeah, no, I don't think that's not their job to do that. They're not a news outlet. They can provide a platform for news outlets. They don't get to say what the news outlet says. I mean, it's kind of bordering on free speech as well. So, especially Apple, who is one for free speech and basic human rights and all the good stuff that Tim Cook touts.
Do you need Apple filtering the news for you?
Basically every interview.
Is a valid question, isn't it?
No. They don't need to filter it. I think they can curate what sources are put on their service, but they cannot curate what the content of those sources. That would be wrong. It's not their purview.
Okay. So are they going to do fact checking, do you think?
I don't think that they're going to go that far. He didn't really say exactly what they're doing. He just said there needs to be, quote, discussion about it between the tech companies who offer services like news and, I guess other companies who provide RSS readers and stuff like that. So there needs to be discussion about it. And he's not saying that they have the answers, but they need to talk about where to go from here as far as fake news.
I think it's very interesting that Q decided that they have a responsibility. And I think it's going to be problematic, especially with people that are making the accusations of what is or isn't fake news.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's pretty easy to see what fake news is. And fake news is news that is not real. It's a lie. And the difficulty is,
should they be filtering it for you? Because there are tons of people who'd rather make that determination for themselves.
But yeah, I think... Well, there's different gradations of fake news because it's become like it's buzzword. So a lot of people are using it incorrectly. Fake news originated with stories that were patently false. They were made up stories, and they have no basis in fact. So I don't know. I mean, to publish those types of stories is detrimental to journalism as a whole, and also to where people get their news, but it also serves as entertainment. So where does this is blurring so many lines.
Mr. Q right has opened a can of worms here.
Yeah. He didn't promise that Apple's going to do anything about it. He said they're working on stuff.
So another thing is that, Tim Cook and Eddie Q attempted to buy Imagine Entertainment, or at least they started discussions that could have led to that purchase. Imagine Entertainment is a Hollywood production company owned by Ron Howard and Brian Grazer. And there were talks. We don't know how long they'd been going on for, or how far they went, or even why they broke down. But this is,
or even well, if they're okay, real,
even if they're real.
I mean, Imagine is saying that,
well,
story's false. Nice. Or part of the story.
Nice. But Imagine Entertainment was behind Apollo 13 and Da Vinci Code and a bunch of television shows and other things. So it's not like it's a small production house. It's a reasonably well-known production house with known productions. Apple was trying to boost original content, right? They've got the Planet of the Apps and Carpool Karaoke going on, which are two shows that they're going to bring to Apple Music subscribers. And so if they're going down this content creation path, having a production company that already exists is an easy buy for them, right?
Yeah.
And it's not the first time. Like, we also talked about a rumor earlier last year about how they were considering buying Time Warner before the AT&T deal went through.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it's Apple. They have so much money, they can consider buying whoever they want. So if someone comes up for sale or is looking like they're in trouble, I'm sure they consider it. They consider a lot of stuff. And they have a team dedicated to that. So I'm sure this team is in talks all the time with all the companies.
Right.
So that this came out is not, it's interesting because Imagine's not in trouble per se, or like, they're not looking to sell. So it seems, it suggests that Apple reached out to them because they were either looking to, make their own content or perhaps strike a deal to get some sort of exclusive with Imagine or something. But that's why this is interesting.
It makes sense from the standpoint that, right now Apple's in this position where Hulu works with the TV app, but Netflix does not, where Amazon content doesn't even exist on the Apple TV. And Amazon has its own production group making shows that are award-winning shows. And so Apple risks being left out. And if they can't pick up Time Warner, if they can't pick up Imagine, are they doing the things they ought to be doing? Are they missing the boat here? Is Eddie Q really the right person to be in this role if that's what they're doing?
Yeah, well, I mean, he has so much experience and his services section is booming. So, I mean, he's doing,
I don't know. It just appears to me like all the focus is on iTunes and not enough focus on all of the other stuff. Am I not looking at it right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. He says, if you want, did you watch the Code Media interview?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
At all? No. I mean, he basically talked about all the same stuff that he normally talks about, but there are a few nuggets in there. Like, I think he said something along the lines of, they know television because of association, because they worked with all these television companies before. But I don't think that's necessarily true. Just because you've worked alongside television companies on, deals to sell their content does not mean that you know how to create content. And I, might get a little blowback on this, but I think
they still have some lessons to learn.
The Planet of the Apps. Yeah. Did you see the Planet of the Apps trailer? I mean, I could be wrong. I'm going to withhold judgment until...
Tell us what you saw when you saw the Planet of the Apps trailer. What's your perspective? What do you see? Go on.
It does not look appealing. I mean, it looks appealing to a certain class of viewer, a very niche audience.
Mikey, it's...
But it does not look...
It's reality TV. It's meant for... It's very close to Shark.
It's like Shark Tank, except limited to apps.
Are you surprised?
I'm a little surprised. I mean, I thought it would be...
It's not for app developers.
I mean, they could.
Every app developer who's ever lived has always heard, hey, I got this really cool idea for an app. You want to hear it? I'll cut you in. And they're sick of that, right? So it's not for app developers. It's for people who have had app ideas at some point and been the person talking to the developer, being able to watch along and say, yeah, I thought of something like that, and that's how it should have gone, right? Maybe I should get on that show. That's what it's for. It's for that and for people who like the drama of the judges telling them no, right?
I don't think that's going to be a big part of the thing. It seems like there's going to be like a, you know, it's going to be segmented, right? There's going to be, it's not going to be like Shark Tank where every episode they're going to have judges, you know, saying yes or no to a certain thing. They're going to start off with that, and then they're going to take that concept through to fruition. So there's going to be teams. So it's going to start off like Shark Tank, then move its way on to kind of like a voice kind of. Yeah. So, I mean, that concept could be interesting. But the elevator pitch thing is really kind of hokey. Escalator pitch, I mean.
I don't know about the escalator part of it. But, having seen people pitching is... Everyone says pitching is easy, and yet so many people do it so very badly.
Yeah. So in the show, they have 60 seconds to pitch their idea to the judges. And while they're doing it, they're literally riding down an escalator. That's why they call it the escalator pitch.
That's a cute little idea and a cute little way of limiting the time. Exactly so.
Yeah. And then when they get to the bottom, the judges swipe left or right on an iPad. And if, whoever is interested, or if no one's interested, then I guess they leave. Or if there's two, then the contestant gets to pick who their mentor is, I believe they call them the mentor. Yeah. So, I mean, it's interesting for people that are interested in that, I think. I don't know if it's going to play well beyond that audience.
Maybe we'll see how it works with the audience of people who watch Shark Tank. There's a large dedicated audience of Shark Tank watchers. So it could do the same.
Could be. I think people, I mean, I don't like Shark Tank, but I mean, people who like Shark Tank,
you don't like,
it's kind of fun to see the weird idea that they come up with. I don't know what kind of weird ideas.
So the problem
ideas.
With Shark Tank
there's only gonna be
is,
like
is this, right? You, people go in there with an idea that is sometimes a very reasonable idea, a very plausible idea. And they've already begun to prove it. They've already got some amount of sales. And they walk in there and they say, I want to give you 30% of my company or whatever it is for $100,000, $150,000. So they've already said exactly what their company is worth. And it's a piddlingly small amount of money. And and they're giving away a vast percentage for that piddlingly small amount of money. So it's a good way to lose your whole company, right? Or lose control of your company because... As you know, presume you've got a partner, so now you're 50-50. Presume you're giving up another 30. So one of your partners is already out in terms of a majority stake of the company kind of thing. It's a really, you watch it and people are nuts giving up their whole business and their ownership in the business. Don't you want something that's supportable? Don't you want to retain control and have an investor that's a partner not going to take you? I don't know.
But the so-called prize from Lightspeed is pretty sizable. The investment, it was over $10 million dollars, so that's pretty
right. I mean, with the Shark Tank, the real win is to go on there and then turn down all the offers and get all the phone calls from people who saw you on Shark Tank to invest.
Or just get that advertisement.
So we had this article about Apple's confidence and acquisition strategy. standing in the way of large takeovers. And this is something Roger wrote. And Roger wrote that Apple's been unable to pull off large acquisitions because it often feels like it doesn't need to, but also because they're hesitant to approach the process. Right, that they're trying to be risk averse, and because they're risk averse, they don't cooperate with third party advisors like investment banks. And I think this is almost a non-story. First of all, I'm looking at this, and it's depressing to read. Basically, investment bankers are saying that Apple should hire investment bankers. Shocking. Isn't that amazing? And I think this is ridiculous because if you think about it, Apple makes a ton of acquisitions. We don't always hear about them right away. They're not necessarily huge ones, but there's certainly a big number and big money behind it. This is not.
Yeah,
this is investment bankers being left out of the process because Apple talks directly to company's management instead of investment bankers.
This is your typical Bloomberg story. So, I mean, take that for what it's worth. But I mean, no, it's not really news. I don't think this is just how Apple operates, and yeah, they have a decent. I mean, they have a more than decent team.
Well, and there are big takeovers, M&A, right? Compaq bought Digital, HP bought Compaq, Microsoft bought Nokia,
yeah,
and you know, bought Motorola, AOL bought Time Warner. That's an awesome list, isn't it?
Well.
Sounds
like all those things went real well.
So does Apple belong on that list?
List of failures.
That's what I'm looking at.
I don't know. I mean, look, the strategy that they're looking at right now, which is buy smaller companies on the cheap, and then use that technology or acquire the talent and make their own technology, seems to be working just fine for them.
So what
right
I would
now.
Say.
I don't think they need to diversify.
The investment bankers wanting more business from themselves is fine, but this is a stupid thing that they've put out. And it was fine for us to cover it, but the investment bankers need to go soak their heads here. Is Apple doing everything right? No, I would say not. But is Apple doing enough right that they're purchasing the companies that they want to purchase and developing the technology in-house that they want to develop the technology in-house for? So far, signs point to yes. Wouldn't you agree? Other than
your impression of the iPhone 8, but we'll see.
Of the apps, right?
Yeah, that was it. I don't know about that. I mean, I could be wrong. The guy behind it is he's a big fish.
So he is.
He brought over American Idol and what's the other? What is he known for? He's known for what did he bring over?
What's the name you're thinking of?
What reality show? It was like one of the first big reality shows. I forget what it was. It was a game show. I forget what it was called. Anyway.
I'm going to look up the name
he's a big
thinking
deal.
Of because you can't even think who you're thinking of here.
His name is Ben Silverman.
Okay.
I think. Just Google Ben Silverman. I'm sure it'll be like the first thing that pops up.
Surprisingly not. Ben Affleck comes first. Ben Silverman was for a while at NBC Universal and producer of The Office, Jane the Virgin, Ugly Betty, Marco Polo, The Tudors, Biggest Loser. You were probably thinking Biggest Loser, weren't you?
No, I think I was thinking about The Office.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. I think he did The Office and then he brought over some reality stuff. And now his team is like, that's like what they do. They pitch reality shows.
Cool.
Yeah. But his idea is neat in that he did like a Project Runway kind of thing you could buy the clothes, the winning clothes, like after the last episode aired. But I mean, you don't get that immediate gratification, right? But with Planet of the Apps, when the last episode airs, you can go and immediately download the app and consume.
Yeah.
So it's kind of neat. I mean, I don't know if that's going to drive sales or not.
Well, you know, it will somewhat. It'll be that big initial bump. And it won't necessarily carry it out, but it'll be a big bump.
Yeah. Plus, I mean, it's going to get featured on the App Store.
So. All right. So let's wrap this episode up. Is there anything else you want to comment on before we do?
Nope. that's looking at the stories, that's a big
stuff. All right, well, this has been episode 108 of the Apple Insider Podcast. Mikey, where can people find you on the App Store?
On the App Store,
where can
not.
People find you on the internet?
I'm on the Twitter machine at MikeyCampbell81.
And appleinsider.com. Well, I'm your host, Victor, and I want to thank you again for listening. Thanks again to Mara for sponsoring today's episode. Mara is a hands-free virtual running assistant that uses cutting-edge voice recognition to help coach you to better runs. Play music, get updates on your location, pace, or weather, and compare your current speed with past runs without ever stopping to have to look at your phone, because no one wants to look at your phone. And use your earbuds, because Mara can hear your commands and put them into action. So download your new running partner for free at mara.ai today. Thank you, and thanks again for listening.